This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome to the Business Hour. I'm Ron Camacho, your host. And today, the business at hand is the business of having a smart financial strategy for the future. The last few years here in the U.S. and around the world have not been the most, conducive for economic growth. But in reality, in some cases, it hasn't been as bad as some people might perceive. And we want to take some time today to review the basic principles of what it takes to weather a storm, weather tough economic times, and create somewhat of a positive outlook for the future, particularly with a financial strategy in place. And so I'm very pleased to have as my guest Steve Young of Edward Jones, a firm which has been dedicated to educating its clients. And that is half the battle, I'd say. Steve is helping people to understand the value of having a plan in place, whether it is a very a detailed plan or not. Almost any plan is better than no plan at all. Would you say that's true?
Without a doubt. You know, that's one of the things that we try to make sure that our clients understand is having a plan is really the first step in a good financial strategy to make sure that you're going to reach your goals and objectives. So many people don't really have a plan in place. And if you don't, then you're subject to not making progress because you don't know where you should be and when you should be there. So that's really the first step when I sit down with clients is to come up with a plan, understand what the goals are, where we're trying to go, and then adhering to that plan, which is another major challenge because sometimes people tend to get sidetracked when we go through little bumps in the road and various other things, and sticking with it, it's almost like a diet. You know, if you think about when you're trying to lose weight, you have a plan, and it's easy to develop the plan, but sometimes sticking with it and having the discipline to stay with it when things seem to be going contrary to the way that you want it to go is one of the challenges that I deal with.
It's interesting that you should say that because that's what I was thinking about just before you mentioned the analogy. And I have found personally that when I have successfully lost a few pounds, it was because I was adhering to an actual plan. And though I never really liked the idea of having to count calories, which in some sense is like counting dollars, it mattered. It helped. It gave me a daily roadmap, and that helped with the longer-term strategy for weight loss. And, you know, and of course, included some exercise. And you could probably extend this analogy about counting calories and getting exercise and having the right nutrition, but we won't go down that path. Instead, I had alluded to the past few years not being the most conducive for economic growth, but it's also true that there are some individuals and some companies which weathered the economic drought of the last few years better than others. And would you agree that we maybe even saw some improvements economically or some positive signs in 2013 and that we could be on our way to greater stability?
Well, you know, if you think back all the way to March 9th, 2009, sometimes people don't like to think back to that, but that was actually the market low, the stock market low here in the United States. And if you think back over roughly it's been about 5 years, you know, the markets have over doubled in value over the last 5 years. And sometimes people lose sight of that. And we've made tremendous progress in terms of getting the wealth back that people saw go off of their statements. And in virtually every case, if people stuck with their plan, with their strategy, they're better off today than they were before. As a matter of fact, I just read something recently that net worth of people here in the United States are higher than they've ever been. So there is more wealth out there. We've seen increases in security prices. We've seen decreases, fortunately, in people's liabilities out there. People are servicing their debt. So when you look at the average American, they're better off today than they've ever been.
You know, I'm wondering, Steve, if the state of the larger economy, both nationally and internationally, wasn't a wake-up call for a lot of people, and it just caused them to be a little bit better about spending and saving. Is that possible? Is that what you might have seen in some of your clients?
Yes, I think so. I think a lot of people, even though we've in the last 12 years gone through two pretty big economic downturns, I think corporations in the first downturn that we saw from 2000 through 2002 did a great job of getting their balance sheets, if you will, in shape and, you know, lowering the leverage that they had in their business, which is basically the debt that they have, as well as increasing the assets and things like cash and that sort of thing. And this second time around, I think a lot of people, individuals, took it to heart that, you know, if I'm not in good financial shape, I could be in a whole lot of trouble. And so a lot of people have taken advantage of lower interest rates and refinanced some of the debt that they have and realized that just living through debt is not a sustainable strategy.
It's almost as if, and this is pure speculation on my part, and you may not even want to comment on this, but I have through the years, and I have never seen or read this anywhere. I've just had folks say that there could be something to it, and that is, following World War II, the two countries which were devastated as a result of the U.S. Defeating Japan and Germany and putting them in a situation where they were hitting rock bottom, those countries dug in, and as a consequence, for the next few decades, Germany and Japan had two of the strongest economies in the world. Their people were saving more, were investing in a smarter way, but mostly saving a lot more. But they were very industrious. And you might say that in the U.S., following the Civil War, the South became extremely industrious. It's almost as if this economic drought was a wake-up call that caused a lot of folks, maybe not just in the U.S., but definitely in the U.S., to be smarter and to dig in a little bit. Now, the big difference is that as bad as the situation may have been interpreted by some to be, it ultimately did not cause devastation for millions of people. So there was not the devastation, quote unquote. But I think a lot of people felt like, hey, I need to look seriously at my economic future and that of my family. And one of the things that people might have done, and I don't know if this is true, Steve, did you find that folks came to you in the last few years who didn't have an economic plan, a financial strategy in place, and said, I'm now rethinking the value of a strategy and created one for the first time?
Yeah, most of the clients that I get that are new generally do not have an actual plan in place. They haven't done retirement planning. They haven't done college education planning. They haven't looked at their life insurance needs or long-term care needs or addressed many of the catastrophic risks that can impact a family. So I essentially walk them through the process of looking at where they are, looking at where they want to be. In other words, when do you want to retire? When do you want to be financially independent? Do you want to send your children or grandchildren to college? You know, what are the things that you want out of life? and then putting in a strategy for getting from where they are to where they want to be. And sometimes it's a process. You know, some people say, "Well, I'd like to retire tomorrow," and I always tell them, "Well, you know, there's a lot of great places under bridges downtown that have some openings," and it really depends on the standard of living that you want to maintain when you say you want to retire. You know, you can always retire. It's just, you know, do you want food to eat? Do you want a shelter over your head? That sort of thing.
Right. And if I'm not mistaken, there are many people who are not only going to be able to, who are not going to be able to enjoy the exact same standard of living. You see it in folks who have scaled down in the size of their home. They might have had a second home, and they're moving into that second home and retiring in that location in some cases. But they are scaling down and nevertheless able to live a pretty good lifestyle. It may not have been like it was during the heyday, but if they don't have a plan in place, they're definitely going to be on the outside looking in. Tell us a little bit about the process. You spend some time with your clients taking inventory of where they've been, where they are, and then asking them about where they would like to be. Following that and beginning to put a plan in place, is it soon thereafter that you begin talking to them specifically about their investment portfolio? Is that the order of things? You take inventory, you try to put a plan in place, and you then, moving forward, help them make adjustments to create a balanced portfolio?
Yeah, it's basically a five-step process, and it's the same process. I'm a certified financial planner, and it's the same process that we use at Edward Jones as any, you know, certified financial planner would use. And yes, that first step is understanding where you are. It's taking that inventory, as you phrased it, of what not only investments that you have, but what does your balance sheet look like? Another part of that process is figuring out where you want to be. And, you know, with specific dates, I want to be financially independent by age 65. I may not quit working, but I want the opportunity to either work or not work. Or it might be, you know, I want to do nothing at age 60 or 70 or whatever it might be. The process, the strategy on the investment side comes in is, once you figure out where they are, where you want to be, of course, you've got to make some calculations in terms of what wealth they need and then what risk are appropriate to take. In other words, you know, somebody that's very wealthy and 60 years old, they might be able to not have to take any investment risk with their money or very little. I mean, they might, you know, if they have $5 million and they only want to have, you know, $70,000 a year to live on, they could put all their money in CDs.
You know, I want to talk, in fact, a little bit more about that aspect, risk, as it is a part of one's profile. But we're going to be taking a break. We're here with Steve Young of Edward Jones, and we're talking about what it takes to have a good financial plan in place and a balanced portfolio and a more comfortable future. We'll be back with Steve right after this break.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
Hi, this is Dave Smith. Listen every Monday to America's Web Radio, The American Dream. my past background with healthcare, being president of insurance companies. We'll keep you informed on healthcare and other topics that's going on in Washington and around this great country. American Dream, 10 a.m., America's Web Radio.
Do your children know where their food comes from? At ConnectingFarmToFork.com, there's all kinds of ways to help your child understand how 300 million of us here in America stay nourished, clothed, and healthy. Activities, food facts, and farm visits help young people learn about America's hardworking farmers and have lots of fun doing it. Visit ConnectingFarmToFork.com today for a learning experience that'll really grow on you. ConnectingFarmToFork.com, brought to you by the people who care at Feedstuffs Food Link.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Business Hour. We're here with Steve Young of Edward Jones, and we've been talking about the process of helping an individual evaluate where they are financially, particularly when Steve takes on a new client and you're helping them take inventory of where they are and assessing where it is that they want to be moving forward. And you touched on risk. Risk is one of those areas that you have to assess, because if a person is very risk averse, of course, they're going to be a lot more conservative kinds of strategies in place, investments in place. And if they're not very risk averse, I guess they will be able to do some things with you helping them moderate that risk-taking behavior one way or the other. I think probably your role is to still help them not go over the edge. Even they're saying, hey, Steve, like, show me some investments I can make that have a really good, quick, high return on investment, which oftentimes people still think that way. And you're there to say, well, time out. Let's look at this more closely. Tell us a little bit about how you help someone assess their own risk profile.
Well, that's a great question. And really one of my biggest roles, I feel like, is a risk manager. And one of the things we do in part of that process is we do a risk tolerance assessment, where we try to understand how an individual feels about volatility associated with their portfolio. But there's one risk that most individual investors seem to forget about, because, you know, America's very much the here and now. But the other risk that I'm always trying to balance with that is what we term as longevity risk, which is essentially the risk that you'll run out of money before you run out of life. And part of my process is identifying that will their risk tolerance profile support the risk that's prudent to take to try to make sure that their money lasts long enough. So when I'm doing the calculations and using the software, if we find that somebody wants to retire at age 65, say, for instance, and they think that they're going to live to age 90, if we find that they're running out of money at age 85, they may need to take more investment risk, in other words, risk or volatility of their portfolio, to help try to reach the level of return that they need to make sure that they don't run out of money before they run out of life.
And what about the case, Steve, where a person has, let's say, almost extravagant, that might be too strong of a term, but spending habits that include travel, nice cars, maybe, you know, I have oftentimes referred to some folks that have a lot of those kinds of material objects as being in the Ferrari of the Month Club. And some folks can absolutely support having a new exotic car and having a very nice home. In some cases, it's been paid for. They might even have a second home that's been paid for. But at some point in time, those spending habits may need to be scaled down. And as you say, if you don't want to scale them down in order to accommodate them, you're going to have to invest in such a way that could accommodate that kind of a lifestyle. And so there must be a little bit of catch-22 in there where they have to be made aware that, okay, if you absolutely don't want to let go of this kind of lifestyle, you that in and of itself is taking a risk. Is that something you have to discuss?
Yeah, and that, you know, that gets back to the longevity risk. Is if the lifestyle that you live is more than the wealth can generate. You know, I think of myself as an income architect. If we can't generate enough income to support the lifestyle that you're living, then you're faced with a choice. At, you know, at the end of the day, nobody knows for sure what's going to happen with them or their life. And, you know, one of the successes, the only way I know I've been successful, unfortunately, at the end of the day, is when somebody dies and they have money in their account. And we never know when they're going to die to do that. But people have to make choices. And what I can tell them is if we identify the lifestyle, I can tell them how much they're going to need to save if they've already haven't accumulated enough wealth. And it's, then it's up to that individual to either save that amount or not. At the end of the day, I can't twist their arm and make them take money out of their paycheck to fund their 401k or whatever the savings plan might be, or send money to me. That's their choice. But my job is to make them aware of the risks that they're taking and what's going to happen more than likely if they don't go the prudent way.
And these days, Steve, are you also finding that that as a risk manager, you're having to remind people that everyone is living longer, that for a variety of reasons, the quality of health care and people staying more active and living longer, that whereas with the last generation, 30 years ago, a lot of 60-year-olds were thinking that they might live to age 75, and there are now 60-year-olds who realize they could be, even though we're not talking about the average longevity of an American leapfrogging from 75 to 95, there is that possibility. There are growing numbers of people age 95 and 100, and so you're having to explain that that is a possibility and that they're having to plan much further out than previously thought?
Yes, without a doubt. If you have a married couple that are they're both age 65, I believe there's a 70% chance at least one of them will live to age 90 if you look at the mortality tables. And I always do give the example. I lost a very dear client last year. She would have been 105 had she made it to November. She died in the summertime. But it's very common, or it's much more common. It's not very common, but people are living well into their 90s and in some cases past age 100. So planning for that is something that needs to take place.
I in fact, remind people, I say there's a very scientific approach you can take to gather the data on this. Watch Willard Scott, and you'll notice that there are many more people that are 105 years old that are celebrating their birthdays than ever before. And if you watched Willard Scott 30 years ago, it was folks in their 90s, but that there's an increasing number, and the data does support that the fastest growing population segment in the U.S. are people over 100. And, you know, with that possibility, and it's only a possibility, you know, there's no guarantees that you're going to make it into your 80s, your 90s, and beyond 100, but that has to be factored in, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, or people can, again, choose to or choose not to. Usually when I'm doing retirement planning, which we're talking about people's expected longevity, we pick a date, as morbid as it might sound, or an age that they, you know, want a plan to go through. And while I do try to educate people in terms of what expected mortalities are, most people have a feeling based usually on their own family. They'll look at how long mom and dad or grandma and grandpa lived, and they make some assumption about how long they're going to live.
I want to take a step back here, and we were talking about the last few years and how some folks fared better than others. I'm wondering whether or not it was from your personal experience and also what you've learned about, is it folks that had a better balanced portfolio that may have weathered the storm better in the last few years? And let's talk about it also in the context of what a balanced portfolio is. I know that when you ask 10 financial advisors what represents a balanced portfolio, they will all tell you, you will not only get 10 different answers, but they will all tell you it could be defined in many, many, many different ways. But the original question is, did folks with a more balanced portfolio fare a little better over the last few years? And then let's talk about the very nature of a balanced portfolio.
The people, I tell people that are wondering about how clients did, I tell it there was really only two segments of my clients that did not do well over the last, through the downturn and then the upturn. It doesn't relate as much to whether or not the portfolio was balanced. It was more a function of their behavior. And what I mean by that is if people got frightened and chose to abandon the investment strategy that we had put in place, they generally do it at the wrong time. There's an old saying in this business is individual investors, while you're supposed to buy low and sell high with emotions, a lot of individual, and there's a lot of studies that support this, don't do that. They do the exact opposite. They tend to buy when things seem good, and that's usually when markets are starting to get towards their tops. And then they generally sell when markets are getting low, which is, you know, the wrong thing to do. So the two segments of investors that got hurt were those that chose to abandon their investment strategy and sell when the markets were low and then never get back in as the markets were recovering, which only had one investor do that. And then another segment of investor that was hurt were those that were systematically liquidating part of their investments to support the income stream that they need to live on. And if you're selling as the markets are going lower, you have no chance to recover. So that was another segment, if you will, of my clientele that were really hurt by the downturn. People that stuck with their investment strategy, even if we made some minor changes to make it a little bit more conservative, those are the people that weathered the storm and are much better off today from a wealth standpoint than they were at the market highs of, say, October of 2007.
The kind of behavior that you're talking about, which is, I guess, could also be characterized as emotional investing, is something that also has you in that role of being a risk advisor or a psychologist virtually of sorts. I want to talk just a little bit more about that right after the break that we're going to be taking, and then also get into the fact that most of your clients would have had a balanced portfolio. Let's talk about some of the folks that don't and will define balanced portfolio, sort of a basic finance 101. We're here with Steve Young of Edward Jones. We'll be back with Steve Young right after this break.
This is Michael Gano with Insight to Israel. Every day, the Israeli Defense Force finds itself on the front line of the war with the militant arm of Islam. Surrounded by enemies from within and without, they fight for the only Jewish state. Military service is mandatory, ladies serving 2 years and men serving 3 right out of high school. While young people in other democracies are busy traveling or attending university, Israeli men and women gear up for basic training. In a world of heads of state, politicians, ambassadors, diplomats, and a leftist media, many times our voice at the grassroots level is drowned out. So we started an ongoing project called Hershey's for Heroes. Patriot conservatives from all over the U.S. are sending Hershey's chocolate bars with a note of thanks for defending Israel. Won't you join us by sending a sweet message to the IDF? For information, please see my Facebook page at Michael Gonneau. Thank you, God bless Patriot Conservatives, and God bless Israel in her struggle for sovereignty and security.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Today's consumers find themselves faced with a greater variety of choices than ever before, both in the food they eat and the information they receive about that food. Feedstuffs FoodLink was created to provide you with a balanced source of information for making decisions about your family's balanced diet. Visit FeedstuffsFoodLink.com to learn about your food directly from the source, the people who work every day to provide it. FeedstuffsFoodLink.com, connecting farm to fork.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Business Hour. I'm Ron Camacho, your host. And we're here with Steve Young of Edward Jones. We've been talking about the kind of investment strategy and financial plan that helps to keep an individual more comfortable now and moving into the future, how some individuals may have fared better over the last 2 years during these tumultuous economic times. And just before the break, Steve touched on some clients that may not have fared as well because there were some investment decisions made that were somewhat, maybe less than rational, and that it didn't have to do necessarily with a balanced portfolio, which when I asked the question, I completely forgot that most of your clients were probably going to already have a balanced portfolio in place. But let's talk about whether or not that did play a part, whether or not, from what you know, did folks with more balanced portfolios fare better? And then we'll get into defining what a balanced portfolio is.
Yeah, the people that have balanced portfolios in the downturn, they weren't hurt as bad as people perhaps that were taking excessive risk. And they saw the value of their portfolio go down more. The flip side of that is that when you're in a bull market, if you do have a balanced portfolio that's made up of stocks or where you have ownership basically in a company and you have bonds, and there's different types of bonds where you're basically lending your money to either municipalities or corporations or to governments. And we also look at how much international investments you have and as a way to talk about balanced portfolio. When you really talk about portfolio and balance, you're talking about ways to diversify your investments among different asset classes. And those that that had balanced portfolios, and we have several different asset allocation models, which is basically when we look at whether or not somebody's balanced, there's different answers for that question. Some people, balanced might be how you're spreading your money out. In our most aggressive investment allocation, you have all your money in stocks or in equities where you're taking ownership, but we're trying to diversify it among that. In our most conservative asset allocation model, your money's split evenly between cash and fixed income. Most of my clients fall somewhere in the middle of those two extremes. But those that were in there, they saw their – if you're in the middle of that that breakout, if you will, those two extremes, you did not see your portfolio go down as much as, quote-unquote, the stock market did in the downturn, which helps some people stay on track or keep with the strategy. And then on the upturn, if you had the exposure to what some people consider the higher risk assets, the stocks or equities, you saw your portfolio grow at a quicker rate than those that stayed all in cash or cash and fixed income.
Now, Steve, I want to ask you a question about balanced portfolios that I've always wanted to ask a financial advisor. And I want to draw from sort of your perspective as a professor of finance, not as Steve Jones or Steve Young of Edward Jones, but taking a more hypothetical approach to describing a very, very generic model of what a balanced portfolio might be like for three different very generalized categories. One would be someone with household income of $100,000 to $200,000. One where the household income is $250,000, maybe to $750,000 or even $1 million. And then, of course, there are high net worth individuals in the distinct minority. And the strategies for each of them could be similar, but in all likelihood wouldn't be the same. You just don't have the kind, the wherewithal at the lower end of the spectrum to have a certain kinds of investment. But you achieve a certain balance, or you can actually help someone to achieve a certain balance at all those different levels. What would it be more like in our first model? What would be an example? And you can give us more than one, but just a very basic, simplified model for having a balanced portfolio. Someone who the household income is $150,000, and that's higher than the average American, but it will still apply to somebody who has a, where there's a household income of $50,000, and there's a little bit of savings. There's money actually to be accrued and to invest. What would you help someone to do to begin moving in the direction of even creating a portfolio, and how they would keep it balanced?
Well, that's a great question, and you touched on something I think that's very important. You know, the things that I take into consideration are people's investment time horizon, their risk tolerance, and their goals and objectives. But before you even start thinking about investing, because you're always putting your money at risk, there are some things that you need to have in place. And the first thing I encourage people at the that haven't accumulated wealth or perhaps aren't in higher income brackets is that you need to get out of debt first. If you're paying credit card debt and you're paying in the teens for interest rates, before you think about investing for the long term, you need to get out of that. And the second thing I always encourage people to do is to establish an emergency fund where you have 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses in cash. And if you're retired, might even endorse doing a year's worth of living expenses in cash. But once you've met those basic needs, it's not as much driven by the household income, but what the goal or the objective is. And to get back to your question about the portfolio, we basically break investments into five different categories when we're thinking about balance. We say aggressive investments, and what is one category, and what we're talking about there are things like small companies, which tend to move up and down in value quicker than large or mid-size. Also things like precious metals that could go up and down quickly. The second category that we have are growth investments. Usually when we're talking about growth investments, we're talking about companies that are either mid-size or large companies. They're not paying much in terms of dividends, and we'll allocate a portion into that category. The third category are what we call growth and income investments. And usually those are larger companies that are paying big dividends, so the investor has the opportunity for price appreciation on the value of the stock, but they also get an income stream from that. And it can also include things like real estate. So if somebody has a real estate investment property where they're renting out their house or their business, and they're getting both an income stream from that as well as hoping for the price of the real estate to go up, That would fall in our growth and income category. And then income is another category that we have. And when what we're talking about in income are those investments that have an interest rate and a maturity date. So that's basically where you're lending your money to somebody and they're paying you for the right to use it. And so in that category, you have things like bonds where you're lending your money to municipalities or corporations or to the U.S. government. You know, you've heard about treasuries and that sort of thing. That's debt that the government has that's purchased by both individual, institutional, and governments around the world. And then finally, at the last category that we have is cash, which I spoke to at the beginning of this. But we do think everybody should have a certain amount of cash, both from a portfolio perspective, but more importantly from a financial planning perspective, to make sure that you don't have to sell any of those other investments in an inopportune time. If you have adequate cash on hand, it gives you the luxury, if you will, not to have to sell any of the investments in any of those other categories because they are subject to go down in value. So to get back to the part of your question where whether they're making household income of $100,000 or household income of $750,000, it gets back to what's that goal or objective? When do you want to be financially independent? What does that mean? How long do we need to make that money to last? How much have you saved and how is it invested? And then they may not have to take a lot of investment risk where you're doing more of the things that are more conservative in nature, or if they to achieve or have a possibility of achieving the lifestyle that they want, they may need to take more of the aggressive and the growth in income type of investments.
And those different categories apply across the board. In fact, oftentimes there are folks with relatively on that spectrum that I just set up with lower household incomes to just happen to have either invested in or inherited a home, a second home, a house from a family member, and decided to buy another house, and all of a sudden a big part of their portfolio is in real estate. And I'm wondering whether you see that now and then, someone who just happened to become heavily invested in an area like real estate because it started off with what they thought was a good buy, or they inherited a piece of property and that led to another one, and all of a sudden they're a little bit heavy with real estate?
Yeah, that could happen. I've seen it quite not as much with my clients, but perhaps some other clients, because, of course, most people that come to me aren't looking to build a real estate empire because I really don't operate directly in that. Now, we do offer real estate investment trust, which is a type of security where people can invest through me in different types of real estate ventures. But people that are looking to put their money into actual real estate, you know, where they own the property themselves, they're generally not coming to me to do that because I can't help them in that regard. But, yeah, it's very common. It's one of the mistakes that I think people make is they'll have a large position, whether it's in real estate or an individual stock. Sometimes you'll see where people have a disproportionate amount of their money in one individual company.
We're going to be taking a break here, Steve. When we come back, we'll talk just a little bit more about a balanced portfolio and how moving forward it can help to facilitate that more comfortable lifestyle that we've been talking about that most everyone wants to plan for. We're here with Steve Jones, or rather with Steve Young of Edward Jones, and I apologize. That probably happens now and then. We're here with Steve Young. We'll be back with Steve Young right after this break.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF A nonprofit organization is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
Hi, this is Kate Copsey inviting you to listen year-round to America's Homegrown Veggie Show every Saturday at 10 a.m.
Cook Immigration Partners is your passport through the immigration maze. Whether it's help with E-Verify in your business, or help in how to document a new employee under the new I-9 rules, or if you marry a foreign national, Cook Immigration Partners is your best choice for a legal advocate. Call us today at 866-286-6200. That's 866-286-6200, or visit us on the web at www.immigration.net.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Business Hour. We're here with Steve Young of Edward Jones, and we've been talking about the basic elements for a smart financial plan and how a balanced portfolio can be a hedge against tumultuous economic times, how some people did fare better during the last few years of economic drought with a strategy in place and a balanced portfolio. And Steve has been talking a little bit about the various dimensions of having a balanced portfolio. There are whole areas that we have not talked about that range from insurance to taxation, and both those areas can affect a person's financial plan significantly, particularly the area of tax. How do you advise your clients when it comes to the different possibilities that you know range from unemployment insurance to dependent care credits and charitable donations and that whole area of taxation, which can have a significant effects on just 1 year and then in over years if you're not making the right decisions or working with an accountant, you could be making some mistakes. What's your general advice to your clients about tax?
Well, excuse me. Generally, when I'm working with my clients, we do take taxes into account, and really, when most of the stuff that I'm looking at are ways to construct portfolios where taxes are going to have less of an impact on the outcome, because at the end of the day, you know, your net return is usually after taxes are taken into consideration. So some of the things that I try to do when constructing portfolios is there's different types of accounts out there. So one type of account is a tax-deferred account, like a traditional IRA. And it might make sense to have part of somebody's portfolio that's generating consistent income in that if they don't need the income from a back to the balanced portfolio perspective. It, while on a taxable account, have investments that are more tax efficient. So for things like individual stocks, don't throw off capital gains unless you sell them. So one of the things that I was very involved in this last end of the year is mutual funds, which aren't necessarily a very tax efficient vehicle. A lot of them, because over the last 5 years, we've had a lot of gains in the stock markets, are starting to distribute capital gains. And working with my client's CPAs, we were trying to figure out if there were areas where we could harvest unrealized capital losses to offset those gains. So at the end of the day, the client's not looking at a biggest tax bill as they might be otherwise. The other thing that I try to educate my clients on are if the use of a Roth IRA might be a good vehicle. You know, a Roth has some characteristics to it where you don't get current year tax deductions for contributions, whether it's due to an individual Roth IRA, or a lot of companies now have a Roth 401k where people can make after-tax contributions, but then it gets into a vehicle where the money can grow tax deferred, and in most cases can be taken out tax free. So making sure people are in the correct investments, given the type of account they're in, taking advantage of ways to lower current year taxes through tax deferral into things like traditional IRAs and 401ks, and then using tax-efficient investments. So for back to the categories we were talking about investments, one category that people can purchase is municipal bonds. So in the bond or income category within our balanced portfolio, we might use municipal bonds, which generally are tax-free on a federal level. And if you buy bonds from the state that you live in, they can be tax-free on a state income level as well. So what I try to do is make sure that people don't pay more taxes than they have to. We can also do things from a state planning standpoint because very large estates can suffer taxation as well. But there's all sorts of strategies that an individual can put in place to either minimize or eliminate those taxes as well.
Well, you mentioned bonds, and you can shed a little more light, if you would, on bonds and the up and down nature of bond prices, and also explain to listeners what bond laddering is, if you would.
Yeah, so within the bond category, first of all, I mean, just make sure everybody understands what a bond is. A lot of people hear that, but they don't really understand it. Again, there's basically two things you can do with your money from an investment standpoint. You can take an ownership position where you're actually owning part of a company. So, for instance, with a local company here, Coca-Cola, say, you could actually own part of Coca-Cola if you were to purchase their common stock. Or Coca-Cola also issues debt from time to time, and they're looking for investors because they're financing their business to purchase that debt. So they can go out to the markets or to a bank, and generally they do both, and issue bonds. So I might have an investor that buys a Coca-Cola bond that has a interest rate and maturity date. And one thing that people – there's risk with all investments, and on bonds, one of the biggest risk to bonds is if interest rates go up, bond prices go down. And when interest rates go down, bond prices go up. So if you think about the last 30 years, we've really been in a declining interest rate environment from the very high interest rates, if you think back to the early 1980s, to now what's generally considered a historic low. So there are some risk out there with bonds, and bonds historically or conventionally are thought of as a more conservative investment. And what we try to do with our clients is even to diversify within bonds by doing things like laddering maturities, where you have bonds, we think about the maturity rate. You can have short-term bonds, which mature, we say, generally within 2 years. You can have intermediate term bonds that might mature from 3 to 15 years, and you can have long-term bonds. And we encourage our clients to have some of all of those, but the ones that are least interest rate sensitive are the shorter maturities, the short and intermediate rates. So we'd like to see people diversify within bonds, both by maturities, also by the credit quality of the bond. So there's what they call investment grade bonds, which are highly rated by the different credit rating agencies. Of triple B or above, and then there's what they call lower quality or junk type bonds, and they both play a role in a well-diversified portfolio. But most importantly, back to the tax question, if you're going to own a bond in a taxable account, oftentimes it makes sense, especially if somebody is in a higher interest rate, to have at least part of that in municipal bonds so that they don't get taxed on the interest that's earned.
Now, that's a whole topic that would be a good reason to have a financial advisor, is to be able to learn more about the different kinds of bond investments and why you might want a ladder. A whole other area that we haven't really gotten into, and we're not offering a seminar here. We're just kind of touching on some general areas for consideration, and if there's anybody out there that has thought about creating a financial strategy and working with a professional financial advisor, here's another area that is ever-changing, and I would imagine that for you, even keeping up with this stuff is a juggling act. And that's the area of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and now we have the Affordable Care Act. There are these areas related to Social Security and health care in general, health insurance, long-term care that come into play. That's a whole ballgame in and of itself, isn't it, Steve? I mean, it can really impact your financial status.
Right. And we do spend a fair amount of time, especially on Social Security, trying to figure out the optimal age, especially when you've got a married couple. There are strategies around the best time to take Social Security. And we do work. We've actually got some software tools that allow us to do different scenarios and look at the outcomes based on those scenarios. Because if you think about it, Social Security is a very valuable asset, assuming it stays in place. Because as we all know, there is some jeopardy to that program because it's not going to be adequately funded, I think, after 2037. But right now, it plays a huge role in providing retirees with part of the income that they need. So that is something that I spend a lot of time on, and we've actually done seminars on that topic alone just to educate people about what their different options are for taking it and what their benefits are, because there's a lot of different benefits out there.
30 seconds, Steve. I we're running out of time here. I want to know if there's any cause for optimism moving into 2014 here.
Without a doubt, there's always long-term good news out there, and there's a lot of the good things happening economically in terms of the unemployment going down and various other factors.
Steve, I want to thank you for taking the time to come on to the Business Hour. You've been listening to the Business Hour here at America's Web Radio. We're on Fridays from 10 to 11 a.m. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you on the radio next week.